It is Your Money. I'm Susie Jones, your host, and we have, as always, every week, and we're so happy to have him, the founder of Wealth Enhancement, Bruce Helmer, and Senior Vice President Peg Webb, both financial advisors, talking this day about the middle of the year, and it's time to check in to see how you're doing. Welcome to both of you, and good morning.
Good morning, Susie. Good morning, Bruce.
Hi, Peg. Hello, Susie Jones. Thank you for the nice introduction. And yeah, Peg, I don't know where time goes. You know, I always tell people, as you get older, time just seems to go faster and faster. And we're halfway through 2025 already. And we thought we would just talk about, you know, some things, frankly, that we talk about a lot on the show, but we're going to kind of focus and concentrate on several kind of key ideas or strategies or planning opportunities to achieve financial independence. And I guess by financial independence, we mean the ability, you know, to live the lifestyle you want without having to worry about running out of money. So to retire and not work if you don't want to, or maybe you still want to work for the intrinsic reward of working, but to give people financial freedom to have the lifestyle they want without being concerned about running out of money before they run out of breath. And really quickly, if you can indulge me, I wanted to share a quick story. Last week, we did a show where we talked about the phenomenon of a lot of people that have the economic wherewithal, have the resources to spend more, to enjoy life more, to help their children or their grandchildren, to give to charity, to travel, to do things, and they're reluctant to do it for fear that they'll spend too much too fast and they won't have enough. And we did a whole show on it last week, and I think it resonated with a lot of people. But I had a true story in terms of that, again, relating to what we talked about last week. A couple of weeks ago, I had a client reach out to me and say, hey, I'm thinking of buying a jet ski, but I had a bunch of expenses recently that were not part of our plan, and I'm wondering, you know, if I'm spending too much and if I shouldn't buy this jet ski. And I quick looked at the situation and I emailed him back and I said, absolutely, you should enjoy life. You should buy the jet ski. You still have, you know, we're not too far afield from your plan. It's going to be fine. That was a couple of weeks ago, and I don't think this person even listened to our show last week. This is just sheer coincidence. But I got an email from him this last week saying, taking the new jet ski out, pulling my three granddaughters together on the jet ski, listening to them laugh and chortle and scream and have fun. The jet ski was worth, thank you for talking me into buying it. It was worth every penny. It just made my heart happy to hear that story. And it was so directly proportionate to what we talked about in the show last week. But Peg, anything you want to get to in terms of we're mid-year action plan, key components to help people achieve financial independence? I'm sorry I hijacked the show from the beginning. I just wanted to share that story.
Well, I love that story, and I'm beaming ear to ear. Remember, I'm a visionary, so I'm seeing these kids on this tube behind this jet ski laughing and having a great time. So I love that story, Bruce. But financial independence means a lot. We talk to clients and prospective clients a lot about what that means to them. And a lot of them will say, you know, they don't want to be a burden on their family. They certainly want to know if they have enough to do all the things, just like you mentioned with the phone call you got. That's kind of a daily, weekly phone call for us. Because they just want the conviction that they're not making a mistake by purchasing something, and we talk them through. And then the other thing is just being confident that you have enough savings and investments. But we always go back to those basic principles, you know, save more, spend less, invest well to meet your goals. Well, what that statement right there is missing is that while you have this time on this earth, how do you do all of that? How do you save? How do you respectfully spend? How do you live your life and capture some of those moments because you've worked hard? So one of the things that everybody knows about me, and I just said it again, I'm visualizing these kids on that inner tube on the water. I'm a visionary, and I always have felt that I need some clarity as to my future, like what direction, what is it that I want to do? Clarity to me, and I say this all the time, is clarity brings energy. So if I know where I'm headed, and this is all my own personal movie going on in my head, if I know where I'm headed, then that clarity brings energy, and you have a lot more probability of success if you constantly are kind of following your passion. So what do I mean by all that? Financial independence just means you should be aware of, you know, the savings you have, the buckets of money that you have out there. How do you protect that nest egg? How do you create, you know, saving, I think, is easier, Bruce, than the back end where you're going to spend the money that you worked so hard to save. And there's where the complexity comes in, because how much should you save and how much should you spend and how much debt should you carry, Bruce?
Yeah, and again, it's easy to say save more, spend less. It's harder to do, but I love what you said about the idea that clarity brings energy. And I think, Peg, this visualization that you talk about that comes so naturally and was probably instinctive for you, I don't know, maybe you can talk about that if somebody coached you to do that or worked with you to do that. My guess is that to a large degree, it just came naturally and instinctive to you. Not everybody has that natural gift. And so part of our job is to help them recognize that, to give them goals and objectives and dreams to look forward to, because you're right. If there's something to look forward to and you can see the light at the end of the tunnel or visualize the end result, it does make it a lot easier to have the discipline to do those things. How did you become again, was it natural or did you get some coaching on this?
Well, there was certainly natural tendencies, because I would see the world, or I would meet somebody, and I would just ask, number one, I ask questions of everybody. So even as a young kid, well, what about this? Well, what about that? Always being curious. The vision part just kind of came in my head. And then as I grew up, if you will, and it became a business person, you know, then I was striving for people that could that could educate me or take their time to help me with the questions or the visions that I had, and how do I get there faster? So this clarity brings energy. It just does if you seek to learn. Now, you are so right, Bruce, that not everybody's like that. Hence why, as financial advisors, you know, we're trying to create that plan, trying to give them some clarity about what the future looks like. And that's actually transforming, you know, people to feel confident about saving and spending. So today is about financial independence, but that whole exercise is helping them feel financially independent to live the life that they want to live. And I bet a lot of the listeners today, they do have a vision of what they'd love to happen in the next 10, 20 years. They may not just have it as a movie in color. Maybe it's a little black and white, but that's where you can seek help like advisors or friends or neighbors and get it to be in more color, Bruce.
So let's be, you know, so I think everything, you know, that we're talking about today, these are things that we've talked about on previous shows at one time or another, but let's consolidate some bullet points here and give people something tangible. So we're talking, again, we're halfway through 2025. We decided it's probably a good time to go back and review some key components, some key strategies to achieving financial independence. We talked about what that means. We talked about visualization. We talked about clarity bringing energy. What are some specific steps or bullet points that we can give people as a tangible thing that they can write down if they're taking notes right now, or strategies or specifics, Peg?
Yeah, I would say for the rest of this year, if you have debt, make sure that it's good debt, not bad debt. And what do I mean by that? Good debt has some type of tangible something, like a jet ski or a car or something tangible, and you are willing to take a loan out on it because you believe that that is going to bring you joy, but also it will be worth something one day. Now, sometimes the value of them go down, but still that may be okay. Or experiencing, you know, going to college and paying for that. That's an investment in your future. We don't like bad debt where you're just buying something at a general clothing store or something and putting it on a credit card for long-term. Things that depreciate go the opposite way of taking out debt for those things. The other thing financially, what I would be focusing on right now is maximizing the contributions to your tax deferred, your Roth plans at work. You know, all of a sudden here, the stock market is at an all-time high again, but you've got 6 months here to make sure that you maximize all that. Start thinking about your taxes for 2025 now. Maybe you have some losses in some bad stocks that you have. Maybe you want to take your losses so that you can write that off for 2025. Start looking at it now instead of the end of the year. The biggest one that I will say today, and I harp on this all the time, is if you qualify for charity distributions out of your IRA, and that means you're 70 and a half or older, and you're philanthropic, you want to give to some of these organizations, start early, take it out of your IRA, because there's a couple reasons. One being it doesn't show up on the front of your return. So if you give $1,000 to a charity and you were supposed to be taxed on that RMD, it disappears on the front page. And that's a big deal because there's a ripple effect on the front page of your return. So make sure you do that. And then how do you lower your income this year? Already start planning tax-wise, deferred deductions, review your tax holding. See if you're taking out enough. It's mid-year. You don't want to pay a big bill in the springtime. And then I already mentioned that the stock market is high right now. I like to do Roth conversions when the market was down. So I'm hoping that some of you took advantage of that the first 6 months of the year. But if we have some volatility here still in this year, that's a good time to do a Roth conversion by year end. Bruce?
Peg, a couple things I just want to pick up on that you just said. You gave us a lot of good stuff there in a short period of time. You mentioned Roth conversion. One of the things that I still see, and again, we talk about it a lot on the show, is that the vast majority of the people that I meet, even people that are doing a good job saving and investing, you know, in a lot of ways, they do not have what we call tax diversification. The vast majority, the overwhelming majority of their investments are in tax-deferred plans. And I understand that we tell people, we coach people, participate in your company retirement plan, your 401k or whatever it is. It's easy. They just withhold the money from your paycheck. If it's a pre-tax dollar, it lowers your income in that tax year, and it lowers your taxes in that tax year. All kinds of good reasons to do that, and I'm not against doing that. In fact, we coach people to do that, but if it's the only thing you're doing, that's something that might come back to haunt you later in life. So we want people to put money, and you mentioned it, in Roth, in a potential tax advantage strategy as well as a tax deferred strategy. And the big one that most people don't do, Peg, is they have very little money in taxable accounts because they don't want to pay taxes this year. They want, you know, immediate gratification, but there's certain advantages to those taxable accounts, particularly when you get to be retired. And now we're going to look at retirement income and where do you draw that income from. So tax diversification, I think, is a big one. And you mentioned the Roth conversion. The other one you mentioned is good debt, bad debt, and paying off bad debt. Peg, I just saw another article again that credit card balances are like at all-time highs again. That's not the way you're supposed to use credit cards. If you're paying interest to go buy something that you don't need, that you just want, you're torpedoing your financial plan of financial independence. Peg, I know we talked off air. We got a lot of text questions last week late in the show that we didn't get a chance to get to that we'll try to hit some of those today. But anything else that you wanted to talk about, key things, takeaways for listeners on our mid-year planning to try to achieve financial independence?
We're just trying to highlight a couple of the things today, and I think it's a good reminder, and I know it's summer and everybody's enjoying, but it's still, put it on your calendar to review this year already. Just don't wait till year end, because then there's just too much to do in a short period of time, Bruce.
Yeah, I think we probably covered the main components that we want to do. We have a few minutes left before the break, and the break after the second half of the show, Susie will help us make sure that listeners drive the show. But I have a couple questions, Peg, from last week that we didn't get to. You want to try to tackle a couple of these?
Sure.
So somebody texted, I'm 68 and I have a general understanding of financial concepts, but I really want to understand it better. What's a good way to educate myself?
Oh, that's great. Well, obviously they're listening to the show, so that gets a basis for a start. What I've encouraged clients to do is, well, right now you can, I'm a visionary, so I like to watch YouTubes. I like to listen to podcasts while I'm walking. I like to select some financial books. There's a couple out there from Bruce Helmer. There's reputable companies like Wealth Enhancement Group has always been known as an educator. We try to educate people to make better decisions, to be confident. And then maybe ask friends and family, how did they learn? You know, how do I understand more so and get a little bit more knowledgeable? So those are a couple ideas.
Yeah, that's really good. And the only thing I would caution people on a little bit is always get a second opinion. Whatever education you're getting, you always have to look in and make sure that there's not some self-serving reason for giving that advice. So verify. But you're right, Peg. There's a ton of information out there. And if you can find a credible, reputable place that doesn't have a vested interest to try to encourage you to do something that's good for them instead of good for you. There's a lot of good information out there, but verify, get a second opinion. Another person wrote, what are the tax rates on withdrawals from a 401k, both federal and state? The amount of the withdrawal I'm thinking of is $10,000.
Well, that one needs a little bit more information because we actually have a graduated tax system, meaning, you know, there's some money that's taxed at 10%. There's some money that's taxed at 12, 22, 24. And by adding $10,000 on the federal level, you may actually go over one of those BRAC percentages. So what I encourage clients to do when we do this for our clients is we do an estimate and see how much you would fall into a grander bracket. The other thing you have to watch out for is there's so many gotchas in both the federal and the Minnesota return, and we call that a ripple effect. You don't even know how that's going to affect something underneath your tax preparation until you do an estimate. And then, so I can't answer the exact percentage, but can guide you on, you better look at what the ripple effect of that is, Bruce.
Yeah, I think, you know, the reason for the text and the reason for the question is not everybody understands that a withdrawal from a tax-deferred account is taxed as ordinary income. So you look at all your other sources of taxable income during that year, and you add the amount of the withdrawal to that, and you see what your adjusted gross income is after deductions. But you're right, Peg. So, yeah, up into, if you're a married couple filing jointly, as an example, you're in the 12% tax bracket if your income is $96,950 or below. So the percentage you pay is a function of all of your taxable income, of which that withdrawal is added to your other income. We can do one more really quick. Someone wants to know if you'd buy a car at 0% interest or just pay cash.
Ooh, that's a good one. If you have a car at 0%, ask if you get it, if you could get a deduction for the cost of the car, since you don't have to borrow any money, or do you pay cash? So if you're going to pay cash, there again, I'd like to get the discount. But right now, money markets are still paying close to 4%. So take the zero, and you could still make money on your money in the short term. Bruce?
Yeah, I agree. I don't have anything to add. Susie, I know we're about out of time for the first half, but listeners can drive the entire second half of the show.
All right, very good. And you are listening to Your Money, brought to you by Wealth Enhancement. I want to remind you, for the next half hour, this is your opportunity to call or text 651-461-9226. 651-461-9226. We already have text questions coming in. Hopefully someone feels like giving us a call. That'd be great, too. 651-461-9226. We're back right after this short break. And welcome back. It is the second half of Your Money. This is your opportunity to jump in with a question for Bruce or Peg. 651-461-9226. 651-461-9226. We're talking about checking in mid-year to make sure you're in good financial shape for the second half of the year. 651-461-9226. Now here once again is the founder of Wealth Enhancement and financial advisor, Bruce Helmer. Also, Peg Webb, senior vice president and financial advisor. Welcome back to both of you.
Thank you, Susie Jones. Thank you, listeners. If you joined us late, yeah, Peg and I have been talking about really things we talk about on the show all the time, but just kind of consolidated them into one mid-year strategies and ideas and thoughts for your consideration of how you achieve financial success, retire when you want, how you want, help loved ones if you want. Everybody, you know, we say this all the time, we're all snowflakes, we're all different, but how do you get to where you want to go personally? We talked about several things, but then we also took a few questions that we didn't get to from listeners last week, and we have more of those if I might jump in. But Susie and Peg, I think the people listening this week should be able to drive the second half of the show for us with their questions. Peg, anything you wanted to hit on, though, any key takeaway that you want to give listeners from what we chatted about in the first half of the show, or you want to go right to questions?
Nope, I think we go right to questions. That's the best part of the show.
651-461-9226. Question, the texter writes, if it's relative to today's topic, which I say all questions are welcome, right, Bruce? How much state of residence factor into your planning for clients with regard to Roth conversions, distributions, etc.? It seems that if you are in a certain state versus another, there is a lot less of a tax burden. Can you talk about that?
That's actually a great question, Susie. So, Peg, I'll kind of tee this up for you. Different states, so there's a federal tax. We all live in the United States, and we're all subjected to the tax laws at the federal level. But then every state has also got state taxes, and they're all different. And some states don't have any state income taxes. Other states, like the state of Minnesota, where this show originates from, where I currently am a resident, actually has relatively high state taxes. So the texters, and I think beyond just what the texter's question is about Roth conversion, we can talk a little bit to the entire concept of tax planning and maybe relocating to a state with lower or no state taxes. But specific to Roth conversion, Peg, how would you reply?
Yeah, that was actually one of the questions on last week, too, that we didn't get to, as to what's the ramifications of doing a conversion or do I leave all my taxable, tax-deferred money in the IRA, which may possibly double in the next 10, 15 years? So we get this question a lot. And when it comes to creating income, that you're actually controlling whether you're going to create extra income or not. Meaning, if you have an IRA and you would like to have it be ongoing tax-free by doing a Roth conversion, we do recommend that you do an estimate on your taxes. And once again, with the tax calculator, it will catch some of those gotchas that are not prevalent they don't jump out at you on the return until you do a mock tax return. Well, the question here is, if you live in a high tax state, which there's only, and I just looked this up, there's only 9 states that do not collect state income tax. So that's Alaska, Florida, Nevada, South Dakota, New Hampshire, Tennessee, Texas, Washington, and Wyoming. Well, yes, they don't collect state taxes, but they have other taxes. They have to get the money somewhere. So usually there's a bigger sales tax in those types of states. Once again, you do have to kind of do a mock tax return to see, if it's going to be an effect on you and how much you do. So the other thing we coach our clients on is, maybe you don't do a huge amount in one particular year. You find kind of this sweet spot. Well, maybe you could do $10,000 a year and it wouldn't be that impactful, but you won't know until you run these mock returns. Bruce?
Peg, so a couple of thoughts, and I don't want to throw you a curveball or make you talk about something, personal if you don't want to, but I always tell people with regard to, again, Roth conversion is one thing, but just overall tax planning and relocating. Over the years, I've frequently had people say, I'm going to move to Florida or I'm going to move to Arizona because the state, I'm not going to have to pay as much in taxes. And number one, we always help those people strengthen their fact pattern. We actually have a laundry list of like 20-some things that you should do to strengthen your fact pattern in case somebody challenges whether or not certain incomes are taxable or not in the state where you reside now and establishing residency in those states. But I've always told people, look, if you want to move to Florida or Arizona because of the weather, that's great. But if you're only moving because you think there's some big tax advantage, you might be disappointed. I'm not saying there's no advantage, but it might not be as much as you think it is. And that's kind of what I feel like you just alluded to when you described the fact that just because there's no state income taxes, there's got to be some way for that state to raise revenue to run the state, and they might not call a state tax, but there's some other kind of cost. I think you're somebody that's actually personally lived through it. Haven't you changed your residency from Minnesota to Florida? And if that's true, what kind of impact difference do you see in your world?
Well, the reasoning for me to change to Florida was my husband despises Minnesota. He's not from Minnesota. He's grew up in Philadelphia, which is, not as harsh as Minnesota. But for somebody who just really didn't embrace the cold and the, so anyway, for decades, more than 2 decades, my husband was not a resident of Minnesota. I would work in Minnesota. I had a place in Minnesota, but I would fly to where he was, and it made us both happy. So mine was not motivated at all by the taxes. It was the fact that my husband does not like the cold weather. So we chose Florida for that reason.
But again, verifying what I just said, though, what I've told clients, the tax advantage, there might be some, but it's probably not as significant as people perceive it to be. Would you say that's
accurate? Absolutely.
Okay. Susie?
651-461-9226. Can a person be too old to do a Roth conversion, say they're as 75 or older?
Oh, Susie, thank you. That is such a good question, Peg. A lot of people seem to be under the false impression that there's age restrictions, not just on Roth conversions, but, you know, other things that in planning strategies that we talk about, that there's age restrictions. You want to talk about that?
Well, by the way, 75 is super young, and you've got decades of time, bottom line. So I just want to point that out right away. It's actually a really good time to do Roth conversions, depending on your particular situation. I like to get people to do Roth conversions before they have the required minimum distribution. It's just one idea, you know, because you already have income that's coming on your income tax from that required minimum distribution that the IRS forces us to take a percentage out. So if you could do that earlier than then you're going to have a lower tax bracket. But we do so many Roth conversions beyond 70 and a half, and now it's 73 for required minimum distributions. But we do that, and we, once again, I'm doing mock tax returns to see how much room do we have to be able to do that Roth conversion. I already mentioned earlier in the show that I like to do Roth conversions when the markets are very volatile and they may be down. And why would I say that? Because I'm taking my money out of an IRA that's taxable, and I'm moving it to a Roth, and I'm very confident that over my lifetime, that stock market's still going to go up. Then I'd rather have the increase in a Roth, which is tax-free, than have it sitting in my regular IRA that's taxable. Now, that doesn't always work out for people, so I use this term dollar cost averaging. So you can also dollar cost average from taking from your IRA and moving it to a Roth IRA, and let's just say you do it 2-3 times a year, and you maybe don't take such an impact if the markets are up or down. So there's different strategies that we can use depending on who the client is. Bruce?
Yeah, and Peg, you know, the other sweet spot, quote unquote, if you will, for Roth conversion. I like what you said about during market retractions is a good time to do conversion. But the other good time is if you know your taxable income is going to be lower. For example, you've retired, so you're not drawing a paycheck anymore, but maybe you haven't reached the age where you have required minimum distributions, and maybe you haven't even reached the age where you're drawing on your Social Security yet. That time frame where you're retired but not yet forced to take money out of your tax-deferred plans and maybe not even drawing Social Security, that's a great time to do conversions because you're probably never going to be in a lower tax bracket than you are there. But the other thing I wanted to go to is these conversations about Roth conversions and required minimum distribution, it's all part of retirement income planning, right? We get to the point in life, we're not working anymore. Last week we talked about being able to spend more money and enjoy life more. A question came in last week. I think it relates to everything we're talking about right now. My wife and I are retired and we're 69 and 66. We have no debt and we have $2.1 million in retirement accounts with $320,000 of that being in Roth. What are your thoughts about safe withdrawal amounts? Then they complement our show. Thank you very much. But so, Peg, again, the broader question, without even having this person's specific age and dollar amount, but the question is, what's a reasonable withdrawal percentage that people can expect to take at retirement and not blow through all their money before they die?
Yeah, that's a great question. The industry as a whole, and we have adhered to it for a long time, is this 4% withdrawal rule. And it's not a rule. It's an idea, 4%. So if you take 4% out of your 2.1 million, that what's your probability of success if you live 15, 20, 25, 30 years of time? We use this software called Money Guide Pro. And what that does is it allows us to input all the cash and the retirement accounts and all your resources that you have to create income. And then it helps us see what your probability of success is. Now, this 4% rule is actually, they're using 50% the stock market and 50% fixed income. Well, you can imagine if somebody's willing to go 75% of the stock market and 25% in fixed income, they may not have as great of a percentage over a long period of time. They look at historic trends to see what the stock market and the fixed income has had over time. But here's what I would tell you, bottom line. I do not do a financial plan one time and then dip it in gold and put it on the shelf like gold baby shoes. A financial plan has to be worked and tweaked all the time, given the circumstances that are out there. We can use it as a guide, but things happen. Things happen in clients' lives. Things happen around the world. We have to be hands-on long-term to have that be successful. Bruce?
Yeah, I think that's a great response, Peg. The only thing that I'm going to add is, and I especially love what you said at the end, that this is an ongoing process. We don't do your financial plan when you retire at 65 and then never look at it or talk to you anymore. We're looking at it and talking to you at least once a year, maybe even every 6 months. But the 4% withdrawal rule that you mentioned, which is common practice within our industry, I've been challenging that for years for a lot of different reasons. But the biggest one is, as you mentioned, Peg, the assumption that's made, they do thousands and thousands of Monte Carlo simulations, assuming various returns on investment or sequence of returns, but they always assume that the withdrawal, when people spend their money, if they're half in stock and half not in stock, that the withdrawal that they take is half from stock and half not from stock. And I always scratch my head and I say, but I wouldn't let my client do that. In 2008, I talked hundreds of clients out of selling stocks because the market was low. I said, if you need money for lifestyle, let's use your cash or let's use something other than stocks and give the market a chance to recover. So the basic premise on MoneyGuard Pro and on those Monte Carlo simulations and all that study that came to the 4% safe withdrawal rate, I think they start with an incorrect premise that I'm not going to let my client do that. So we always talk about retirement income planning, spending the smart money first, and at Wealth Enhancement, we have a strategic way of looking at and identifying what's the smart money. We call it the Wealth Enhancement Smart Money Strategy, and I think if you do that, your withdrawal rate can actually be much higher than 4%. But the texter, it's a great question, and it's a variation on question like that we get all the time. Susie?
All right, 651-461-9226. A texter wonders, how much does the IRS take out of a 401k and a IRA withdrawal? Is it a 20%? Or what does Minnesota take? Do we know this? Is it a formal across the board, or is it a change?
Hey, thank you, Susie. So, Peg, this is, again, this text, we actually addressed this earlier in the show, and I know there's a lot of confusion on it. Let's try to give clarity to that. But again, I think people sometimes think that there's a specific tax percentage on a withdrawal, and they don't understand that everybody's going to be different. There's not one fixed number for everybody, that a withdrawal from a retirement plan is just like earning a paycheck. It's a taxable event, and you add that tax to all of your other income, or you add that withdrawal amount to all of your other income, and you look at your total income, and that's going to decide what your percentage is. But you want to try to give clarity to that?
Well, I think you covered it there. The percentage that the IRS makes you take out, I think they're asking if I take the withdrawal now in July, can I wait till April 15th to pay my tax? And normally I work with the client to try to figure out what's the closest liability on that withdrawal and or if it's a Roth conversion, and in a lot of cases prepay. but I think there's a percentage like 10% or something that the IRS wants to take out of that paycheck or before you would get 100% of the money, because I don't think they let everybody wait until April, Bruce.
Yeah, what we generally do, that's a great point, Peg. I think maybe you focused in on what they're asking better than I did. So you have an option. So if you're going to take a withdrawal from your tax-deferred plan, you can have taxes withheld, but you don't have to. And if you don't, I coach people all the time on what the approximate tax liability is going to be to make sure they escrow for that when they file on April 15th. But most of our clients, we do have them withheld when they make the withdrawal. So, for example, we might say, let's withhold 12% for federal taxes, and let's do another 8% for the state of Minnesota, and let's withhold 20%. Now, I don't know if we'll hit the bullseye exactly by doing that, but we'll be in the ballpark, and then their net result when they actually file their tax return, they'll already be pretty close, if not right on the bullseye. Susie, I think we've got time for at least one more.
Yeah, a texter writes, wonders about the Trump administration's proposed the big bill. And how long does it take? They want to know how it's going to affect our taxes. But in general, when you guys are looking at a big administrative change, does it take a while for you to have it trickle down to what you're doing?
That's a great question. So, Peg, again, it's the big, beautiful bill passed Congress. It's in the Senate right now. They have a goal to get it to the president's desk by July the 4th. I don't know if they'll make it or not. But I know as a firm, we're looking at a lot of the things in there that might come to fruition, and we've already kind of started to plan for some of it. Big, we've got about a minute.
Yeah, there's a lot in that bill. And remember, the whole thing is trying to save money and maybe reallocate the money where it's going to. Because we are comprehensive planners, we're always looking at what might impact clients. And so right now, this is what I do. I kind of ignore the bill because it's just so many discussions, and I wait until it gets a little bit closer to comment on what's actually, do I think is going to happen, Bruce.
One of the big things, though, that I think people are wondering about is, and we've talked about it a lot on the show, that the tax reduction that went into effect, 10 years ago is set at the end of 2025 unless they extend it. Part of the bill is extending that lower tax rate, but there's a lot of other stuff in there as well. So stay tuned. We'll see what comes out of the Senate shortly, and if it's something the president signs, there'll be more to come as we know more specifics. Thanks, Susie.
All right. Thank you, guys. Good show. Thanks, everybody, for being a part of it. If you did not get your question answered, you can email yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. That's yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Or you can call this number 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 1-888-6-ADVICE, 1-888-6-ADVICE. Make it a great day.